Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Crazy Old Man in His Own Attic, episode 64. Wilbon, we start today with the passing of Jerry Sloan, who was an all-star guard with the Chicago Bulls. As you know well, they retired his number four. He was also a longtime coach with the Utah Jazz. I believe he took them to 19 playoffs and twice to the NBA Finals. He was 78 years old. He had been diagnosed with Parkinson's for a while. I'm just going to turn it over to you because I know you loved Jerry Sloan.
I did, Tony. The first basketball idols I ever had were in tandem, Jerry Sloan and Norm Van Leer. You've known this for a long time. And in Utah in the late 80s, like I told Karl Malone this, and I hadn't told Jerry Sloan. And Karl Malone said, if you don't tell Jerry Sloan you idolized him, I'm going to tell him and embarrass you. So it sort of forced me to go over and have a talk with Jerry Sloan. And it was great. I was afraid of him because he was gruff. He's the toughest guy you ever met. And Sloan said, look, do you talk to Norm? I know you guys are in Chicago. Do you talk to Norm ever? I said, yes, I'm a guest on his radio show whenever he wants. And he said, you tell Norm, I'm going to tell you this story. And the story, I know you know it, Tony. They wanted to trade, the Bulls did, probably Jerry Colangelo, but they wanted to trade and get Norm Van Leer from Cincinnati to pair with Jerry Sloan, who was already in Chicago, an original Bull. Those two had fought. They had had this fight. And Sloan describes it to me. He said, we fought. We didn't just fight. We brawled out into the concourse. I'm not sure if it was Cincinnati or Chicago, but out into the concourse. There are people out there trying to buy popcorn and go to the bathroom. And Sloan and Van Leer, during a game, are fighting out amongst the fans. And they go to Jerry and they say, we know you and Norm have this history. We'd like to trade and get Norm Van Leer. Are you going to block this? You hate it? And Sloan looked at me and he said, I told them, you better get Norm Van Leer because anybody who would fight me into the stands is a guy I want to play with. And Tony, they, of course, made the deal. Those guys played together. They were the toughest backcourt ever. Got to a conference final and couldn't beat Golden State in the Western Conference Final. I love them. Everything I learned as a kid about basketball was from Sloan and Van Leer.
So this is interesting because I agree with you. They were the toughest backcourt ever in the NBA. It's 50 years ago and nobody remembers this. The Bulls in that era, they couldn't get past the Warriors or they couldn't get past the Lakers or they couldn't get past the Bucks. Something always happened. But it struck me they had Bob Love on that team. They had Chet Walker on that team. They had Tom Boerwinkle on that team. They were a big physical team, Mike. They sort of played like the Bears before Jordan. I mean, Jordan yes. changed basketball in Chicago with just a different style of play. Didn't you think they were sort of like the Bears?
No, they weren't sort of like the Bears. They were exactly like the Bears. They were that plays in Chicago, that toughness of Sloan and Van Leer and Love and Walker. And I feel blessed. I talk to Chet Walker occasionally now, and he was probably the most unsung of those guys that foursome, that quartet. And then Boerwinkle was there. You're right, Tony. They couldn't get past Kareem and Wilt. They couldn't get past them. When they finally got past them, they lost game 6 on Mother's Day in Chicago to the Warriors, which broke my heart. Because I was there. But the first game I ever saw, the first NBA game I ever saw, Jerry Sloan was in it starting at guard for the Bulls.
So let me just say this about Jerry Sloan, because he's better known as a coach than a player. But he was all defensive team, first team, 4 different times in the NBA. What he did in Utah to go to the playoffs so many times, to get to the finals twice, you got a coach in Utah. You don't get free agents coming to Utah.
No.
He had Stockton and Malone. He coached them great. There are glamorous coaches. Phil Jackson, Pat Riley, in his own way, Red Auerbach, a glamorous coach. Jerry Sloan, not glamorous. But when he stopped coaching, Mike, he had 1,221 wins. He was
great
fourth all-time. He worked at it, and I always wondered this, and I'll ask you this question. He couldn't beat Michael Jordan. No disgrace. Nobody beat Michael Jordan. Do you think he ever felt, well, if I had to lose to him, at least I lost to my old team and Chicago gets the title?
Tony, I know the Bulls in Chicago were in his heart. He's an Illinois kid. He went to school at Evansville. I mean, that day his heart was there in part. I don't know if he ever thought of it that specifically, but he was such a great coach. And Tony, as you know, the Utah Jazz played with the toughness that he played with, or at least the modern day version that they were allowed to, that he played with. And I know that he and Jordan, who, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, went into the Hall of Fame together. I know that he loved Jordan, and I know that Michael loves Jerry Sloan. Know that without a doubt. And as difficult as it is to transition, particularly for me today, I will, and we'll go stay with the NBA, Tone, and go to Brooklyn Nets Spencer Dinwiddie responding to a comment on Twitter that suggested the NBA would be back June 21 by tweeting, quote, "That's just practice. I heard those last five games in the bubble will start July 15, close quote. Tone, do you take seriously what Dinwiddie tweeted about the season restarting on July 15th?
I take that as seriously as I can take anything in late May, because we're talking about 2 months down the road and, you know, I don't have a crystal ball and I don't know. I know that they have the sights, right? That's important. I know that they seem to have worked out the philosophy and the protocol of the bubble. And I think that unlike baseball players, Mike, who you hear a lot of baseball players saying, I don't know. I don't know that I want to go back into this. You haven't heard that much from basketball players. So I think they have a willingness and an eagerness to go back. They are finishing a season. They are not starting a season. There's a real big difference there.
Well, let me go back to some details, Tony. I certainly agree with you in terms of willingness and eagerness. The season's not going to start on July 15th. It's just not. I'm told it will be more late July, probably August. Okay. It's just not going to be able to happen on July 15th. That's not in the cards. Tony, the sites haven't been determined yet. I mean, Orlando is certainly the leader in the clubhouse in terms of something would happen there. And it looks like something would happen in Vegas. I mean, Houston is not off the table, depending on how many sites they decide to have, which, Tony, will facilitate the bubble. If you have smaller bubbles in each place, maybe it's easier to keep order and is more convenient for people's lives. I don't think it is. I'm told it hasn't been determined. But yes, you know, Orlando and Las Vegas, those are the names you hear most often. And it would be later. Again, there's no July 15 not happening. But, Tony, what it does seem. Go ahead.
No, the one thing I wanted to say was that if what Dinwiddie says is true, these five games, I don't like the five games. You and I both think you start with the playoffs, but at least it took this round robin, 7, 8, 9, 10, one game playoff off the board. Because if I'm the Dallas Mavericks and I'm seven clear of the eighth place team, I don't want to play the ninth or 10th place team. I earned my way in. I just don't like that idea at all.
Well, Tony, I don't like it either, but you could have more than eight playoff teams. Look, the NHL is talking about a 24-team playoff. I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that from the NBA, but they could go to nine teams from each conference. They could go to 10 with somebody getting by. They could. And I know a lot of teams out there, and Steve Kerr has spoken to this, don't necessarily who are out of it, want to try to start up again because they're out of it and they have no incentive, which in that sport is reaching the playoffs. But Tony, I don't think that's necessarily off the table. Some playoff teams would like to play some games before they start the playoffs. How do you do that? So look, there's some details, Tony, that have certainly not been worked out, but it looks like the very end of July is possible, certainly early August, but it looks like that's going to happen.
So as long as we're talking about the resumption of one season, we'll talk about the start of another season, which is always in the wind with baseball. Jason Stark writes musingly in The Athletic that if you're going to have an 80 or an 82 game season, there are some statistical sign points that are very important. He points out that Joey Votto, in his last 81 games, I believe, in 2016, actually hit over 400. If you've got an 80, 81, 82 game season, you could get to 400 in that period of time, and then you would be there with Ted Williams. So, Wilbon, I ask you, if you hit 400 in a half a season, should there be an asterisk on it?
I think you have to, Tony, and I've heard both arguments. And Votto is very persuasive, and it's very smart. And Votto takes the high road. And he says, look, people understand this season isn't like the others. You don't need an asterisk. I would just say if I was sitting with Joey Votto, people aren't as smart as you're giving him credit for. It's great you're doing that. But I think you have to have an asterisk. Tony, any in-game thing, if a game is nine innings, is why I don't like seven innings. If a game is nine innings and somebody hits five home runs, which nobody's ever done, that record should stand. You don't need an asterisk. But in terms of a season, I think you do. And Tony, I don't know what happened in 1981. Maybe we've forgotten, and this speaks to Joey Votto's point in favor of it. In 1981, didn't they play like 110 games? It was, they played like two parts of a
Dodgers
season.
Dodgers who won it played 110.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Dodgers. Yeah.
Tony, there's no asterisk by it, but nothing, as it turned out, happened that requires an asterisk. But I think you do. What do you think?
Well, I think if you go to 400, and the last time this happened, by the way, was 80 years ago with Ted Williams, so it doesn't happen all the time. I think there are two records that are in jeopardy. One would be the ERA record, and one would be the batting average record. It's not going to be strikeouts or home runs or RBI because you can't get that many.
Right.
But those two might fall. I would put an asterisk next to them. But to your other point, if this is a team accomplishment and everybody plays the same amount of games, then I think the winner is the winner and a legitimate world champion. I think a team accomplishment is different than an individual accomplishment. The Redskins won a Super Bowl January of 1983. They had scab players for some of the games in a strike-shortened season.
Yeah.
And nobody takes that away from them, and they shouldn't. The team thing is different than individual, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be discussed ad nauseum. You know, I mean, you're not going to, particularly in baseball, where every number is just, I mean.
The number matters.
The numbers matter. It's going to be interesting to hear, Tony, where people come down on this. All right, we're going to move to golf. And something I know you and I are both going to be crazed about this weekend. The Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning versus Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady match for charity is on Sunday, TNT. Phil admitted recently that he and Tiger, and he used this phrase, clamped up in their televised match in 2018. Tony, do you think the inclusion of Brady and Manning is designed to make this more entertaining, and will it?
So I'm going to watch it, and I think it will be vastly more entertaining. I think it's possible Tiger will even laugh once or twice because of Peyton Manning. Because Peyton Manning is brilliant on television, and I love 9 holes, Mike, are going to be played alternate shot. That is spectacular because that means we're going to see shankopotamus, and that means we're going to see guys leave it in the bunkers, and that means we're going to see Peyton Manning and Tom Brady putt really short or really long. There's going to be mistakes out there, and to me, that will greatly humanize this, and I look forward to it.
But I'm not just going to say their mistakes would humanize it. So would great play. I mean, Tom Brady, Tony, you've played with NFL quarterbacks. You know how long professional athletes can hit a golf ball. And don't think for 1 second anybody out there is not familiar with golf that Tom Brady can't hit it as far or nearly as far as Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, because he can. He does. And Peyton Manning, these guys are single-digit handicap guys. But I will say this, Tony, having played in a couple of high-profile charity celebrity matches, just the level of nervousness. Yes, Brady and Manning will be nervous. Tiger and Phil won't.
100%.
But Brady and Manning, and by the way, you talked about the personality. The personality of Peyton Manning is going to just seep into all elements of this. I expect it to be funny. I expect it to be trash talking. I expect Brady and Tiger to be loosened up by Phil and Peyton. At least I hope, and I can't wait to watch it.
So I'll just close on this particular note. What I hope happens, 2 things I hope happen. I hope that Phil Mickelson brings a football to the golf course and insists on running out routes so that Manning and Brady can throw the ball to him, because that would be wonderful. And I hope if Charles Barkley is involved in it, and I know that he is.
He is.
I hope he will be out on the course. He has the stature of an athlete to walk right out there with Manning and with Brady. He will loosen all the players up. I want him to be on the course, not in a booth, Turner. Put him on the course if you can.
Well, it's too late to determine that. I know where Charles will be, and I'm not going to give it away because it's not mine to give away. I know Charles is involved in the broadcast. Can't wait to hear him.
I hope he's on the course.
I'm not giving that away. But, Tony, it just, you know what? We need something lighter, right? I mean, are we not going to benefit from seeing these guys out there? People should watch. They should watch this. You know, football fans are going to come to this, and I think they're going to be surprised. But I just wonder how nervous, if we get a real indication of Brady and Manning when in the alternate shot. Those guys are going to make shots too. They're going to make putts because they are competitors, successful championship
competitors. They're single-digit guys, Mike, and they've been in the cauldron and they've won multiple Super Bowls, but on a golf course, it's different.
Different. Yep. Can't wait to see it.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Props, happies. Happy 34th birthday, Julian Edelman. With all the fuss being made over Tom Brady leaving New England for Tampa Bay, and then the stunner of taking Rob Gronkowski with him, it's easy to forget that Edelman was Brady's favorite receiver in recent years. Just last season, Edelman had 100 receptions for 1,117 yards and 6 touchdowns, which isn't bad for a guy who played quarterback in college at Kent State. Edelman was MVP of Super Bowl 53, for making 10 catches for 141 yards. But his greatest moment as a Patriot is probably his double grab catch while laying on the ground in the fourth quarter of Super Bowl 51 against the Falcons to keep the Patriots' comeback drive alive. We don't normally think of Edelman as a great receiver, more of an opportunistic one. But Wilbon, his 118 postseason catches are second only to Jerry Rice. If I'm Julian Edelman, I'm wondering when Brady is going to make a phone call and bring me to Tampa Bay, too.
Well, I don't know if that phone call can be made, but wow. I didn't realize he was the MVP of a Super Bowl. I mean, that's a limited universe, man, especially guys who aren't quarterbacks. So, and second to Jerry Rice, that speaks for itself.
That's a big deal. Happy anniversary, Dominique Wilkins and Larry Bird. On this day, 32 years ago, these two Hall of Famers locked up in an epic Game 7 of the Eastern Conference semifinals. Wilkins was superb. He made 19 of 33 shots. He scored 47 points, which you have to figure is going to be good enough. But Bird showed the full repertoire. He made an incredible falling down lefty floater, stole the ball a couple of times to wake the Celtics echoes. He shot 9 of 10 in the fourth quarter. He had 20 of his 34 points in the money quarter. And as usual, the Celtics won the series. Unlike Michael Jordan and the Bulls, who finally got past the Pistons, Dominique and the Hawks never got past the Celtics. Bird, Parrish, and McHale always stood in their way, which really makes that old Bird-Dominique debate rather stupid.
Well, there's no debate, but Bird, I thought that Dominique was elevated with his performances against Larry Bird. And I think they both were playing against each other. And it's not one of those times where people would say, well, let me have a piece of him in late in the fourth quarter. No millennial players. These guys took each other from the opening tip often in game one, and they were spectacular.
Happy trails, Bradley Beal. The New York Daily News is reporting that the Brooklyn Nets are in the market for a third star to join the Sunshine Boys, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and are discussing ways to acquire Bradley Beal from the Washington Wizards. Beal has been a high-level shooting guard since being the number three pick in the 2012 draft. He made the All-Star team twice and was totally miffed not making it this year despite averaging a career-high 30.5 points and leading the Eastern Conference in scoring. Now, Beal has publicly said he loves the Wizards, so he's unlikely to force a trade. But Kyrie has publicly said that the Nets have a, quote, pretty glaring, unquote, need to upgrade their roster, thus insulting almost all of his teammates. And the Wizards may want to move Beal to avoid any potential conflict as to whose team it is when John Wall comes back. Beal got all the shots he wanted this year. That will change with Wall, but it would probably change with Durant and Kyrie as well.
Yeah, if he goes to Brooklyn, Tony, that puts them seriously right up eye to eye with anybody in the East. Bradley Beal's that good and that good a teammate. And Tone, if I'm the Wizards at this point, I got to say to the Brooklyn Nets, I'm taking any two of these players other than Kyrie and KD, any two of them, and a first round draft pick, or I'm going to hang up the phone. But it looks like that could really be a good deal for both teams.
I agree.
All right. So we're going to wish everybody a happy Memorial Day.
And please, social distance, everybody. Please stay apart.